Last night, we hosted New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman at WBUR City Space to talk about her new book, Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America. And she got some news.
Just a couple hours ago, she learned that her book is now the number one book on the New York Times bestseller list.
The book tells of Trump's early days in New York. It was a surprise to see how early on Nixon fan Roger Stone and disgraced McCarthy-era lawyer Roy Cohn were influences. Then the book takes us through 2021, one of her last of many interviews with Donald Trump. In addition to our audience event, we welcome Maggie Haberman to our studio.
Thanks for having me.
Roy Cohn, the reptilian man, you write. I mean, he did look a little like a lizard, but he also slimed people. I mean, yes. He helped Joe McCarthy in his communist witch hunt. He routed out gay men in the Lavender Scare, even though later he would die of AIDS. What did he mean to Donald Trump?
He became the first in a very long line of protectors and defenders. He had a line that he said that Roy Cohn, quote unquote, brutalized for you. And he said that very admiringly. Yeah. Cohn taught him, don't give in, always fight, don't admit anything, never apologize. Cohn became the model for what Trump wanted in a lawyer and protector. Yeah. And he looked for that throughout his White House years.
And the first half of this unbelievably large book, over 500 pages.
Don't drop it on your toe.
Right, you'll hurt yourself.
Right.
But the first half of it is New York. What do you think there is that people may not have known?
I tried to present it in a way that told the narrative of this milieu that this person comes from, where corruption touches on all aspects of media, the real estate industry, politicians in New York life, and racial strife. And all of this formed what he would take with him and export to Washington. Among the new pieces of information that I found were about a girlfriend who he dated in the late 1990s who was biracial. Mm-hmm. And after meeting her parents, he told her that she got her beauty from her mother and her brains from her dad, the white side. I was pretty struck by that piece of reporting. And he has a very long history of saying racist things and then saying that he was taken out of context.
But, you know, it's really so fascinating because in your writing, he seemed to very much like this woman.
He did. There's a very long history of people who either are racist or who say racist things, seeing exceptions to the way they look at the world. So that surprised me. The other piece that I would say that I was pretty struck by is for a guy whose campaign faced its hardest test in 2016 after the Access Hollywood tape became public, and he dismissed it as, that's not who I am. That's not indicative of who
he
was.
This is when he was caught on tape with Billy Bush.
Correct.
Talking about grabbing a woman's body part.
Yes, and appearing to boast about assault. Mm-hmm. Talking about sex and boasting about sex and speaking in really unusually explicit ways about women's bodies and about, frankly, the looks of men and women is something that he has done over the course of several decades. And so I'm trying to sort of present this person and why all of that foretold what we later saw in the White House.
You write that it was The Apprentice, really, that kind of ignited this. Kind of a failed businessman suddenly found himself embraced by America because of that TV show. You're covering him out on the campaign trail.
I think what people really still don't understand is that there would have been no Donald Trump presidency without The Apprentice. I have a very vivid memory of being in Dubuque, Iowa, at the end of the caucus campaign season. And I'm walking around this rally, which is in an airport hangar, and I'm asking people a pretty leading question, which is, you know, are you here because this is the last time you're going to see him? You know, the show is coming to an end, basically. And several people said they were going to caucus for him. One man looked at me like I had eight heads. Mm-hmm. And when I asked him, why were you going to caucus for him? He said, I watched him run his business. And he was referring to The Apprentice. And so the line between news and entertainment for people who were watching the show often didn't exist. You know, they believed that this was who he was. And the gap between that and who he actually is very striking.
He loses the 2020 election and was asking anyone, including the guy who brought him his Cokes, his valet, what should I do? How can I stay in office? You, in your reporting, find that he told aides, well, maybe I just don't leave.
That's right. I learned well after his second impeachment trial had ended that he had been telling people, not long after Election Day in 2020, when it became clear that he had lost, that he wouldn't leave. And on the one hand, we know so much about what he did to try to avoid having to leave. And yet the fact that he was saying that, verbalizing this to people, just shows something about the mindset that I think is important for the historical record.
And by the way, this gets us to some of the criticism of you, Maggie Haberman. This is something that we read in the book. As you well know, there were some people who said, well, why wasn't that reported earlier? So I want to take that up. You were on a book leave, but during this book leave, you also worked with your editors at the Times. There were times when things would come up, you would discover things, and you would report them, like that then President Trump flushed important documents down the toilet.
That was one of them. I also reported in the paper that Mike Pence's chief of staff had told the lead Secret Service agent in charge of protecting the vice president the day before the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot that he was worried, the chief of staff was, that he believed Trump was going to turn on Pence publicly and they were going to have a security risk because of it. And that was a pretty dramatic thing to learn. I was very startled when I found that out. If I had known that he was saying he wasn't going to leave in real time, I would have reported that.
Well, there's another example, and you can comment on it. This is when you were speaking in, I think, late summer 2021. You talk about it in the book, one of your last interviews with Donald Trump, and you asked, you know, did you leave the White House with anything in particular?
Are there any memento documents you took with you? Anything of note?
Nothing of great urgency.
No. Okay.
I have great things there, you know, the letters, the Kim Jong-un letters, I have many of them.
You were able to take those with you?
Look at what's happening.
Wow.
No, I think that's in the archives, but most of it is in the archives.
Okay.
But the Kim Jong-un letters, we have incredible things. I have incredible letters with other leaders.
When the papers were seized from Mar-a-Lago, this was the first time a lot of Americans knew that there had been an ongoing tussle between the Department of Justice and the Trump White House and then Trump and his aides in Mar-a-Lago over getting these classified documents. Did you think about releasing that in August instead of last week? As all of his supporters were saying, he has nothing there. Did you think about, well, actually, he told me he has these letters?
Well, we knew by then, actually, Robin, that he had lots of material, and we've known that since February. He did not tell me that he had classified information. And we have known since February that, in fact, he did have material. I was one of the reporters who broke the story that the Justice Department was investigating this.
Another criticism, there are people who say you are an access journalist, and someone explained that to mean where you trade journalistic integrity for a chance to curry favor with your subject and get to ask them more questions. Now, we have heard your interviews with Donald Trump. We've read your reporting. I can't think of anyone currying less than you do. Can you just address...
I mean, it isn't true, so I don't really know how else to address that. I was the most mentioned reporter in the Mueller report, which was not Donald Trump's favorite document, for those who are unfamiliar with it.
In fact, I mean, again, okay, if you were creating some sort of cozy relationship with him, it did not work because he calls you Maggot Haberman.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote after the book came out, Maggot Haberman. Even spelled your
name. Well, that was intentional. That's what he does.
Of the unfunded liability plague New York Times is my self-appointed biographer, even though she got the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax and the Mueller report conclusion completely wrong, refused to write about the fact that Democrats, and it goes on and on. Can you just comment on this thing that's happened? You go, and in that same tone that you always use, I've rarely heard you use anything but a straightforward question and answer, just the facts tone. And he tells you things, and he says things like, she's like my psychiatrist. And then you go do your job, which is right what he told you, and then he gets angry, and then he calls you and asks, can he talk to you again?
I would say it's a little different than that. You know, he's a subject who I cover, and I covered Rudy Giuliani, and I covered Mike Bloomberg, and I covered Hillary Clinton. I covered it more of a remove, Presidents Bush, the second Bush, Obama, and Clinton. He's the only one who sort of needs media attention and tries to hold the media's gaze.
So do you think it's less about you?
It's absolutely not about me. It's about the New York Times. And the psychiatrist line, as I write, it was a meaningless line intended to flatter. And it's the kind of thing he has said about all sorts of other situations or interviews. The reality is that he treats everyone like they're his psychiatrists because he is working it out in real time in front of all of us.
How about you, Maggie Haberman? You're kind of trapped in this. You can't stop, or can you stop?
Well, he's the story, and he may be the next nominee for for the Republican Party. So as long as that's the case, I will be doing this.
And just, I don't think you're going to respond to this, but it's exhausting to read. It's, you know, page after page of behavior that people are going to analyze for years. I'm not asking you to.
I appreciate that.
Yes, it's lying. And do you ever want to shake it off? Do you? I mean, or are you just at such a distance it doesn't?
It's an interesting question. There is certainly a darkness around some of the stories, but you deal with it. I mean, it's intense reporting, but there are all kinds of intense reporting beats that are not this.
Yeah. Ukraine comes to mind.
Correct. Yeah. That was exactly what I was thinking of.
Maggie Haberman, Pulitzer Prize winning New York Times reporter, author of the new book, Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America. Maggie, thanks so much.
Thank you.